by the powers vested in me by the Federal Communications Commission, I command you to get on the microphone in a serious manner and continue this broadcast.
You are listening to the Massive Report Podcast, your complete source of information, news, and analysis of your awesome town crew.
For the lead!
Are you kidding me?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time again for everyone's favorite game show, Who's This Freaking Guy? I'm your announcer, Sam Sammy, and here's your host, Wing Wingdale!
Thanks, Sam. Hey, you know what?
Woo!
Why don't you go make me a sandwich? Get it? Okay, so today on Who's This Freaking Guy, we will learn more about the brand new head coach and sporting director of Columbus Crew, Greg Berhalter. In our studio, we have three contestants with us. Players, please let our audience know your name, tell them where you're from, and something interesting about you.
My name's Matt Goschert. I'm from Fort Wayne, Indiana, and sometimes when I'm all alone, I like to eat soft pretzels.
Thank you, Matt.
Yay.
That was weird.
Right. Yeah, that was creepy.
I'm William Sasquatch. I'm from West Virginia, up and down the New River.
All right. Yeah. Thank you, William.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Justin. I'm from Iowa, and in my spare time, I like to collect dolls and Pinewood Derby cars.
All right. Thank you, Justin. Well, in the first round, all questions are worth 1 point each. All right. Now, the first round's topic: Born in the USA. In which state was Greg Berhalter born?
Do we have a buzzer?
Yeah, do we buzz in?
I don't know what's going on here.
You will all answer the questions on your own, and I will tell you if you are right or wrong.
So we got to write them down. All right,
I'm ready.
All right,
write it down.
I'm gonna say New Jersey.
I'm gonna go with New Jersey.
I'm also gonna go with New Jersey.
You are all right. It is New Jersey, land of Bruce. On August 1st, 1973, in Englewood, New Jersey, Greg Berhalter was born.
Is that northern New Jersey?
It is. It is just across the Hudson River from the Bronx.
All right.
Speaking of Englewood, New Jersey, question two. What American football coaching legend was also born in Englewood, New Jersey?
Do you want to start this one? I'll start if you...
Go ahead.
I'm going to say Bob Bradley.
Football.
Throw ball. Oh, football?
Throw ball.
I'm going to say Bob Bradley. Oh, I don't know.
Do we have like a lifeline or something?
No.
Wait, I think Matt knows it. You know this?
I don't know this.
So wait, you said American football?
Gridiron, right?
Yeah,
that's right.
Gridiron.
First downs and chalk.
Hint.
I don't know.
Decade.
We have no hints on who's this freaking guy.
Johnny Unitas.
Don't tip off that ridiculous answer for our other two contestants, Sammy Sam.
Bill Parcells.
Okay, and...
Whoa! I'm also going to say Bill Parcells.
Sorry.
Not fair.
Jump the gun on that one.
I totally win.
I'm going to say Bob Bradley.
Justin will also say Tony Dungy.
Question three. What non-soccer coaching legend got his start at the now-closed St. Cecilia's intraparochial school in Englewood, New Jersey?
Non-soccer?
That's right.
I'm going to say Bob Bradley. I'm going to say Phil Jackson.
A sports person from the town that the school shut down? Bobby Hurley.
Ooh, good question. Okay.
Gordon Bombay.
Nope. Vince Lombardi. I'm sorry, guys.
That's a
okay,
guy that
enough
know.
About that football stuff. What current men's national team rising star was born in and lived in? Englewood, New Jersey. Until he was 10 years old.
Ryan Finley.
I'm going to say Michael Bradley.
Going to have to go with Michael Bradley on that.
I'm going to say Michael Bradley as well.
You're all wrong.
Oh.
That would be Alejandro Bedoya.
Oh.
Grew up in Jersey. Moved to Florida.
I thought you said star.
Dilly Duca.
Yeah, really.
Rising star.
Rising.
Undiscovered.
The rest of, these are all New Jersey questions. The rest of my answers are going to be Dilly Duca.
I think that's the end of Jersey. So, last question in round one. True or false? At 40 years old, Berhalter is the youngest head coach in crew history.
That's a good question. Trying to think of how old he who shall not be named was.
I love being on the
I'm going to say he's true.
True.
I'm going to go with true.
True.
No.
We're dumb.
Oh, I'm an idiot. Never mind. Yes, that is true.
Yay.
Hooray, we all get points.
This is the greatest game show ever.
I know.
Bob Bradley was 41 in 2005 when he got the job the first time. But Berhalter is, in fact, the youngest head coach in crew history.
Bob Bradley?
When was Bob the coach of the
where's
crew?
Where's he at?
He was 41?
Yeah.
I have a strong drink. Okay. All right, Sam. How are the contestants doing?
Yeah.
Matt has 3 points.
Yeah!
He has 3 points.
You
and
suck,
Justin
Larry.
Trails with 2 points.
Also, you're dumb, Justin.
Very close game.
Well, that's just well.
Do away answers count more?
I can run across the outside of the room.
Because I am totally playing on my away turf. Anyway.
Yeah.
Everyone listening to the podcast is away. And they don't count.
They wish they were farther. Not.
All right.
All right. Well, now it's time for round two, when the points and the drinks are doubled. Second round, I've got friends in Euro places. Greg was a high school teammate of which U.S. men's national team legend and current MLS front office staffer?
Can you repeat the question? I kind of zoned out.
You are having a double. Greg was a high school teammate of which U.S. men's national team legend and current MLS front office staffer?
Am I going first again?
Ramos. Yes.
I think this is round two, so I think Larry should go first.
Tom Ramos.
I'm going to also go with Ramos.
He's the only person
I'm going to say Tab Ramos.
Yeah, from Jersey.
This time you actually are all wrong.
Oh.
Claudio Reyna.
Where's Ramos from?
Yeah, I don't know where he's from.
Like Texas or something.
Yeah.
Reyna went, by the way,
Wyoming.
65-0. That's 65 wins and 0 losses in Reyna's 3-year high school career.
Darn it.
Wow. Holy crap.
Wow.
Yeah. Question 2. The 2009 MLS Cup, which was played on plastic turf in dirty, stinking Seattle, was between RSL and the LA Galaxy and went to penalty kicks. Coach Berhalter went second after Beckham, but before Crystal Palace teammate and current Galaxy technical director, Jovan Karofsky. The question is, did coach make his PK?
Yes.
Good question.
Matt, would you like to go first?
Yes.
I'm going to say yes, too.
You guys are nerds.
Who went first?
I'm going to say...
Where did he place it, is the question.
I'm going to say yes as well.
You're all correct. He made it. He hit it to the left.
Yeah.
Inside left netting. All right, last question of the second round. What 20-year-old forward who just earned his first cap for the Stars and Stripes in August against Bosnia-Herzegovina has been at Greg's former club, 1860 Munich, since 2007?
Johansson kid?
Larry, are you...
That's my final
guessing
answer.
Yeah,
Johansson?
I'm going to guess the Johansson kid as well.
No, it's not him.
You can't bet the field.
Crap. I can
it's
see his face.
It's everybody else.
August?
Can I call a lifeline? I can't call a lifeline.
No.
I'm calling on my lifeline.
No.
Brian.
The only person in the studio audience
lifeline.
Today.
No. I demand a lifeline.
Who am I to say no?
Come on, Ryan.
Well, it's secret.
John Brooks?
You are also wrong.
Oh. Thanks a lot, lifeline.
We will take your seat away. You must stand for the rest of the taping. The answer is Bobby Wood.
That guy, yeah, totally.
All right, so Sam, who are our two finalists?
Matt and whatever the name of that Larry is.
And the Yeti.
Yeah, the Yeti.
Matt and the
you
Yeti.
You suck, Justin.
I'm out.
All right.
Let's do this. Well, sorry to see you go, Justin, but you
I'll
weren't good enough.
Anybody want something to drink?
Yes.
In the bar?
Yes.
Sorry.
Finalists, are you ready for your last question, which is worth 5 points?
No.
Yes, it doesn't really matter how many points it's worth, does it?
Of course it matters.
I get 50 points for that.
Everything matters. So, Coach Berhalter is a data-driven guy. Who played Data in the Goonies?
I don't know.
I was totally ready for him to say Star Trek.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah.
Data and the Goonies.
The Asian kid.
It wasn't the same one from Raiders and Lost.
No, it wasn't. No. No.
Yes, it was.
It wasn't?
But it was Temple of Doom.
It was totally Temple of Doom. It wasn't Raiders and Lost Ark.
I can't remember the guy's name, though.
I said it wasn't.
No, I said it wasn't the guy from Temple of Doom.
Raiders
and Lost Ark. Yeah, it was the guy from Temple of Doom.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So we have two no-nos. Yeah. His name is Ki Hui Kwan.
Okay.
Cool. This might be a long round.
Yeah, it will be a long round.
All right. That was the final round. It's over. Sam, who's our winner?
We don't have a winner. We have a tie.
How soccery.
It's Canadian win. It's totally Canadian win.
All right, well, hopefully we all know a little bit more about Greg Berhalter. And we've answered the question, who's this friggin' guy? For all our contestants and for Sam Sammy, this is Wing Wingendale saying, you get what you deserve.
And we're back, segment 2 of the Massive Report, live from Hendox, live
from Awesome Town. Very cold Awesome Town. It's supposed to snow tonight, so I'm not a huge fan of that. But I do want to – what I am a huge fan of is the fact that we have our good buddy from Major League Soccer, Soccer.com, Simon Borg back. What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm good. Major League Soccer, everything's good here on our end. Has it snowed there yet? Because we're hearing that snow's coming our way Wednesday.
It has not yet, but I have
Columbus for a little bit.
I have family in Indiana, and they say it's coming because it just started there. So, get your snow treads on. Get your well, you're in New York. You don't even drive.
Yeah, I'm not.
So I wanted to bring you in for a couple of different things. Obviously, first of all, I kind of want to get your thoughts on the playoffs. I'm right now, I'm sitting pretty as far as all of our analysts go because I have everything except for Houston picked as correct, and I'm the only one that did that. So that's my bragging rights for that. How have the playoffs shaped up in your opinion, and what do you think? Was it what you thought was going to happen?
Well, the big disappointment for me are the New York Red Bulls to some extent that, you know, they couldn't carry over their great regular season and great in brackets there because I think we never saw a real soccer game plan, if you will, from them. I don't know that they had an idea what they were doing on the field. Mm-hmm. They were very much a counter-type team, and when it came down to it, I think their DPs let them down big time. Thierry Henry did. But Kansas City being strong, I think people saw that coming. L.A. was the other big disappointment for me. Mm-hmm. The Galaxy, look, I think Landon Donovan and Robbie Keane, they were not at full health because two anonymous performances like they logged against Real Salt Lake and those two legs. I mean, when would you ever think you'd see that? And look, the fact that Donovan wasn't called up to the U.S. national team for these two friendlies coming up is a sign, you know, that ankle was really bothering him, even maybe more than we thought. The Portland-Seattle game, I think it went according to plan as well. You know, Portland, more of a team than Seattle is. Seattle really never came together. And now, you know, we're at the conference finals, conference championship stage, and I think Kansas City blew a huge opportunity in Houston. I thought they had a tired Houston team on the road. They could have really went at them. I thought they had the best chances, but they continue to leave Claudio Biela on the bench. I don't know why you brought this designated player, if not to score you goals during the playoffs. And then Salt Lake just wowed me against Portland. I think Salt Lake has been flying under the radar for most of this season. And I did not think they had a second performance like the one they showed us against Los Angeles where they were just working so hard, getting behind the ball defensively, so committed. And they did it again against Portland. And they exposed Portland. A good possession team like Salt Lake where you can't take the ball off them easy, I think they're a huge issue for the Portland Timbers. So it's been entertaining playoffs. It's been a revealing playoffs, and I think still with some twists and turns left.
So do you think that this is the year that the designated player is exposed as being not necessary in MLS, considering the amount of the performances that the big names put in this during this playoffs? They've been pretty lackluster.
Yeah, look, I think that when it comes to DP, the big names, I mean, anyone who knows soccer knows that one, it's not basketball. I think we have this discussion a lot. Basketball, one player can make a difference. One player in soccer just doesn't. And so, you know, we see Thierry Henry where, you know, he should be making a difference based on where he plays on the field and the salary he commands and his background. But he's just not making a difference. And the complement of players around him, I don't think, were good enough. The players they signed in the summer, Ibrahim Sakagia, David Carney, and then Bradley Wright Phillips, to me, those were they are several notches below Thierry Henry, and they cost the Red Bulls when it counted most. So you need the rest of your squad to be right. And Clint Dempsey, you know, again, he is a guy that I've been calling to be on the bench for the U.S. national team before he came to MLS. And I personally don't rate him as a difference maker. So it's also who's earning these the DP tag also can be head scratcher. But you got to get your squad right. And I think the Crew are going to probably be in that situation. You know, people expecting maybe some big signings from the new, owner Anthony Precourt. And I think get the squad right first. Forget the big names. Forget who your new coach can get from Europe. Just make sure that the squad is right. I think Real Salt Lake is proving it. A team, the team, ultimate team that can play a team game is doing the best so far, them in Kansas City in the East.
So let me ask you this then, with the most valuable player still, I guess, up for debate right now. I mean, everyone's kind of saying it's going to be Mike McGee, but you know, watching that game last night, I thought, how on earth is there a more valuable player in this league than Kyle Beckerman? He's not the most talented player by far, even on his own team. But watching that game last night, the way that he controlled the midfield. Especially against, you know, like someone else who's gotten discussion for being most valuable player in Diego Valeri. You see RSL being so strong up the middle, and Beckerman is definitely that rock in the center. What do you think about?
I think we've seen so many names coming through this MVP discussion. I personally tell you, I don't think anyone's earned it. I would put it on hiatus for this year, the MVP award, because I don't know that anyone. People have had their moment. There have been players who've had, you know, a stretch of a month or two. But you know, if you put a gun to my head and I have to pick someone, I'm picking Mike McGee. Second is Will Johnson. So if you give me the argument that Mike McGee didn't get in the playoffs, I'll say fine, I'll pick Will Johnson. But I don't think there's been one single player who, throughout the course of the entire year, has done it. So that's when Mike McGee comes closest. But I think toward the end of the Chicago Fire season, he came up a little short for me. He had a couple good games, missed a key penalty in one of the key matches for them down the stretch. So I think everyone had their misgivings in this group. I don't know that there's one star from, you know, game one to game 34. So to me, 1, 2, and 3 is. It's McGee, Will Johnson, and then Diego Valeri is third, in my opinion.
Hey, Simon, this is Nate. Last week we talked about the format of the playoffs a little bit, and I just wanted to kind of get your take on how they are currently kind of built out. You suggested, you know, with Houston being tired, there's congestion in the schedule. Midweek games. Is there a way that MLS could do this that you think would be either better in any way that you think? Do you agree with the midweek games and the home and away aggregates and all that kind of a setup?
Yeah, look, I know there's a lot of controversy about the schedule and how the playoff games have been laid out, but I say, come on, get on with it, everyone. I mean, people, just because it's the playoffs, they want extra special treatment. I mean, this is how it is during the season when you're juggling multiple games. This is how it is, by the way, when the Mexican playoffs start. This is how it is in Europe when they're playing Wednesdays and weekends. So, I mean, I really don't have much sympathy. I know people feel that, you know, so much is on the line. Give these games a little more... give teams a little more time to prepare for the games, but frankly, I mean, this is what you deal with on a weekly basis during the soccer season. Deal with it now as well. I'm not giving you special treatment. You know, during the World Cup, teams are playing every few days as well. So, I mean, and that's the biggest tournament in the world. So, I'll be honest with you, I don't have sympathy for all the complainers out there about, you know, spread the games a little more. Or what have you. I just don't buy it. Get on with it, and the cream rises. Look, Houston put themselves in positions where they have to play an extra game. This is part of a competitive advantage that other teams earn that were higher seeds. And Houston, to their credit, they keep battling through it. Now they get this 2-week hiatus. Look, if there's something that, you know, you want to call out, it's a 2-week break. It's not the congestion that bothers me. It's more this long layoff. But, you know, with the World Cup FIFA date, there's not much that the hands were tied at the league when it came to that, unless you just played it on Wednesday and then had, you know, played games on Wednesday. But you're still encroaching on the FIFA window. So I don't think there's a good way to have handled this November slot, except to maybe, you know, end the season, you know, cram one week of the season midweek so that you have an extra week to play with. But the congestion doesn't bother me. Does it bother you guys?
A little bit, I can say. It's, to me, and don't get me wrong, I like watching, you know, the fact that I can watch pretty much a game almost every day. But, you know, to me, it just seems like it's this, and this actually kind of lends myself into my next question, but to me, it's you watch all these games, and then there's this layoff, and obviously we understand that there's the FIFA window there, but then there's another layoff until you get to MLS Cup, and my question is, and it kind of brings it back into the kind of the last playoff question I wanted to ask you. Mark McCullers actually had a great tweet a couple of days ago calling out Columbus local media for not covering the MLS playoffs. They cover the NHL playoffs, and obviously if you've watched any Blue Jackets game ever, the Blue Jackets are usually not a part of that party. what do you think about, you know, as far as the league goes, and what do you think about the presence in the local media as far as the MLS playoffs go for teams that are not in the playoffs?
Look, I think if your city has an MLS team, and as a media outlet, you are investing in the coverage of that MLS team, I think it behooves you, and it behooves your coverage that's coming up. So in the case of, let's say, the Dispatch there, it behooves that newspaper to create more excitement and interest around Major League Soccer in the playoffs by dedicating space to it, because that will then prop up your coverage of the Crew. Currently, you guys have a big press conference on Tuesday with Greg Berhalter, and then, you know, going into the next year. So I think you can tie it all together, and I think if you're dedicating resources and a writer and to report and cover the local team, I think all, you know, you need to also have coverage of the playoffs. But you know, whether it's on the website, you know, we're talking newspapers here, and that's, you know, 10 years ago talk, but you know, whether it's the website or whatever it is, I think you should have some coverage, even though, again, the coverage is out there these days. I mean, we don't depend on traditional media like we did in years past for our coverage. I mean, hop on Twitter, you'll find more than enough coverage on the game, on all these playoff games. So I think if as an outlet you're investing the time and resources, and it's worth your while to do that much, you gotta cover the crunch time. You gotta cover the playoff time. What do you think about that?
Oh, I definitely go ahead, Justin.
Well, I think you sound like you're kind of along with me. Is like I say, you know, just kind of enough with the traditional media, and let's just go all online. Forget the, you know, I know there's this big TV contract negotiation coming up, but let's get all these games online. Let's tell NBC Sports and ESPN just go take a hike. Who needs them? Am I right? I mean, or am I right?
I mean, look, if they left it to me to come up with a TV package, I would say all the local games online. Mm-hmm. And if you're a fan, watch them online. And by the way, you'd have to pay. You wouldn't pay what you'd pay to those watch a match in the stadium, but I would have fans pay to watch their full games. And then for the national partner, I would have the games played in a certain window where I would have a whip around show, and that's my national TV.
Oh, that'd be so great.
That's if they left it up to me, which they never will.
That'd be so.
They
should.
No local broadcasts anywhere.
They should. I mean, that's what you see in you know, Italy, for instance. They have the whip around show where they have people, fans from the particular teams having debates while the games are going on. And, you know,
it's so great, that show. That
isn't
show
that great?
So great.
I love that. I mean, it's fantastic. But I mean, you kind of mentioned too. I mean, the earlier about, you know, Greg Berhalter building the new Crew, and if we could talk about that for a little bit. I mean, I think, you know, this is.
He talked to him on Extra Time today.
Did he talk to him?
Yeah.
Okay.
We got a few minutes with him. Yeah.
Great. I mean, I think this is the question that we all have in on our, you know, front of our minds right now is like, how is this going to work, especially with this surprise of Eddie Gavin's retirement? Obviously, I did not hear you speak earlier on the podcast, which I'm kind of bummed out by. But what are your thoughts about that?
Well, look, I think you see MLS clubs, when they hire managers, they usually either go retreads or they a completely new face, someone who's unfamiliar with the league. And I think in Berhalter, you have that perfect middle ground. He's neither of the two. He's not a retread, and he's not a guy who's completely foreign to the league. So, and he's a guy who apparently has ideas. And he's not, look, from a media standpoint, I read the stuff that he did in Columbus when they first announced him. We had him on today. And he keeps everything close to the vest, man. If the Columbus media tomorrow, you know, are able to pry a little more out of him, that'd be interesting, because he's kind of, you know, reserved in his comments. He's not being bombastic. He's not being forthright as well. Forthright's not the word. He's not laying out everything, his plans for the club yet. I think he's just saying the basic stuff. Look, I want to win. I want to build a good structure. And one that leads to success, and I have a lot of experience to do it. And he does. So, look, I think here there's a chance that the Columbus crew may have landed the next Bob Bradley or Bruce Arena, or it could go the other way and, you know, it's Jesse Marsh, and, you know, maybe he's up and out, you know, in short time. But I would lean towards the Bradley Arena type, a guy you can build a team's identity around, and he seems like he wants to build. He's there to build. He's not going to be a one-year, two-year guy. I'd be shocked if that were the case, even if you had to go through some lumps early on. But it's hard to identify exactly how the team will play under him. I would think it's more like Sporting Kansas City and Portland Timbers, based on what I can glean. But he sounds like he's very much a coach that will depend on the players available to him. But more than anything, I think his mission is also to build to put a European club stamp on the crew. I think he comes with all that knowledge he has and the structure he has and the contacts he has, and I think the crew will have a very much European flavor to how they're built, how they operate, and, you know, again, being a smaller market, I think, who knows, you have a Hoffenheim, just like a Hoffenheim in Bundesliga in Germany, successful club, great structure in a smaller market. I think maybe they want that same international renown that a Hoffenheim had for Columbus. That's my sense, but again, doesn't reveal too much in all the commentary. Have you guys had a chance to talk to him yet, or will you go on Tuesday?
Sam and Patrick are going to be talking to him tomorrow, and we'll have that audio up on the website as well. Justin, I think, had one more follow-up, and then we'll let you go, Simon.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting what you were just saying, because, you know, the build-up over the last couple of years have been to build this club off of basically our local products. I mean, Will Trapp is the primary example of that. Like, this is how the crew are going to be built going forward. And then, you know, you're bringing up the discussion of his European contacts and putting a more of a European stamp on this. Do you see the crew recruiting out of Germany, for instance, or recruiting out of you know, Berhalter played in Holland for a while? Do you see that kind of talent coming in? I mean, the name that we kind of kick around as almost a joke, but I think we all kind of wish it would happen, would be Mix Diskerud. But you know, I mean, do you see something like signings coming from those places rather than focusing solely on building locally?
I absolutely do, because he does so much. He is so detail oriented, is the word on him, and so thorough in his studying of the game and of opponents. I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, some stars from the Swedish second division coming through, and he probably has a list of names from there that can be great contributors in MLS. But I think it's going to also be, though, that the spine of the club is not going to be international. I think it's going to very much be about what you mentioned, youth, and building that youth development. And, by the way, who knows, maybe international players joining the academy. So I see a vision that starts with the academy, and then brings in complementary players. And I would count on more Europeans than, say, South American players. And maybe that's me just making an assumption on his Rolodex, what his Rolodex looks like. Mm-hmm. But it would seem to me to be the obvious way to go if we're playing to Berhalter's strength. No?
So I'm saying that Simon Borg's picking the Columbus Crew for 2015-16-17 MLS Cup champion.
Yeah, you got to give him time to build. Great four, and I hope he brings up a guy like Ryan Finley. I hope you know Spies and Trapp, and also there's guys got to start thinking about the back line, because I think Chad Marshall, he's been a standard bearer for the team. Think you got to start thinking about the post Chad Marshall era.
Yeah, would you keep him around?
That center back area is a weak one, in my opinion, for the Crew. You got to address it immediately. So they have a lot of immediate concerns, I think, to deal with.
Would you keep him around at $360,000 a year?
Well, look, while I like him and I appreciate his career and all he's contributed to the Crew, I think that at that price point, and also for what he's producing, I don't know that he's the dominant player that he used to be, the big difference maker that he used to be, whether on set pieces, in the back, in the air. I don't know that he's still that player. So if you're talking to me and I'm the coach, I would probably look to move on myself.
Simon, always great to have you on the show. Really, really appreciate it, and definitely would love to have you back on, sometime closer to MLS Cup to kind of break down what's going on with that. Thank you so much for coming on the show, man.
Anytime you want. You just call on me, I'm there.
Thank you so much. Simon Borg, everybody. We're going to come back next segment here in just a little bit, and we're going to talk more Crew. Go figure. It's coming up next. This is the Massive Report. Segment 3, Massive Reports. Great segment with Simon Borg. Always insightful and always appreciated when he does come on the show. Definitely cool with that. Want to go into kind of the whole Greg Berhalter thing, because that's a thing that happened this week. And I really want to get... Yeah, I know.
It's a big deal.
Yeah. Apparently we have a new coach.
Everything's changed.
Everything has changed.
Yeah. I feel it in the water.
Yeah.
I feel it in the air.
I can... feel it coming in the air tonight. So I want to go to Larry first.
So many pop culture references.
Because he's so much smarter than us. Larry, your thoughts on Greg Berhalter getting the keys to the car?
It's interesting.
Yeah.
How's that for analysis?
Yeah, it's super.
I mean, I think the pre-court achieved what he wanted to achieve, which is go outside and get sort of an exciting young hire.
Yeah.
Or outside the box. People seem to like it. And sometimes when you get a new coach like Yallop and, Chicago, like, people aren't that excited. There's a lot of criticism and stuff like that. And with Berhalter, there's not a whole lot of criticism. It's more of, like, curiosity. Like, what's he going to do?
Yeah, well, there's really no room for criticism because he has such a short resume.
That's true.
He has a resume as a player, and it seems like as a leader. I mean, he's been a captain And he seems to be a bright guy and somebody who did his homework.
Literally did his math homework
on this. So he came in prepared to the interview. So, you know, good on you for that. And, you know, where is there room for criticism after that? Unless there was a, you know, someone else that was a more obvious person to hire that you did not.
Jay Heaps or, you know, Pecky, I mean, they got a good deal of criticism. Even though they were unknowns.
Yep.
But I think with Berhalter, you know, with Bruce Arena's name behind him, that gives him a lot of credibility.
It's true.
Yeah.
Do you think looking at this hire, especially because it's kind of an unknown commodity, I mean, yes, he's definitely coached in Europe, which is good. It was second division, and it was Sweden?
Yeah.
I want to say, yeah, second division, Sweden. So good, I guess, at the same time, still second division. And do you look at this as something where the Crew are looking to win, or do you look at this as something where Anthony Precourt is looking to create a brand?
That's a good question.
Wow.
I find myself leaning one way.
Your head explodes!
Well, I think the pause there is like, it's reflective of the way everybody feels. No one really knows.
Yeah.
Honest to God, no one knows. I mean, I think there is criticism that can be made of this. I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second. Because a couple weeks ago, I thought whoever they're going to hire, it's going to be the right person because it's Anthony Precourt's team.
Yeah.
And he's setting the tone for the next however many years he wants to have a team in Columbus.
Yeah.
However, this is a weird hire.
It is.
In terms of wanting to win now. Because if Hammarby, and I am not a big, I'm not up on my Swedish football at all.
I don't think many are. Yeah. Unless they're from Sweden.
So it's hard to criticize from a knowledgeable standpoint. But from what I have read over the last week is that he was hired to take over an AEG property in Sweden. That team was one of the larger teams in Sweden that had suffered some setbacks. They had fallen down. They had been relegated. And they were looking to advance back to the top league. So the thing is like, oh, that's much better.
Yeah, it is much better.
The thing is they did not perform.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how they expected him. What they expected a guy from New Jersey who had played in Germany most of his life
and never coached before.
Yeah, never coached before. It had been an assistant coach under Bruce Arena for exactly one season. To come in and change things around in a Swedish league. I don't understand what that expectations were. So, like, the criticism of, you know, well, he wasn't able to get them to score goals and he wasn't able to get them back to the top flight of Swedish football, which I can't even tell you what the name of the league is, for crying out loud.
Is this Allsvenskan?
The hurdy-burdy-burdy.
Yeah, I mean...
That's what it's called.
I mean, so there's some expectations there that are a little bit... Yeah.
It's the hurdy-burdy-burden 2.
The gefilte
league. What it's called.
The Gefilte Liga. But, like, no, seriously, I don't know where the criticism of that, if that criticism is fair.
Yeah.
However, it is not inaccurate to say that he did not achieve what he was hired for.
Yeah.
That's the case. Well, so, but that doesn't mean that he should be eliminated from contention consideration for this job.
Yeah.
And from all reports, you know, we had a meeting last week where it was mentioned he was really, really impressive in his meeting with Anthony Precourt and Mark McCullers. And so, I mean, I think the expectation is that they do want to improve the team.
Yeah.
But I don't think that it's a public relations ploy to hire him because the way that they sold him, my goodness, like they were relentless with the amount of press that they put out about, you know, well, here's all of his credentials. This is where he came from. This is what he achieved as a player. This is what he did as a national team player. They were pretty thorough in that. So, I mean, the name itself is not going to attract a whole lot of attention or give a big boost to season ticket sales, for instance. So I think there is something there where they're trying to build a new team.
I felt that when you said that doth
protest too much, right? It was like right. all, no. He's great.
He's got coaching license.
Yeah. He's like, whoa, wait, we weren't grilling you on that yet. But,
well, that's kind of what I thought. You know, a couple weeks ago, I also mentioned, it's like I thought that they were probably going to try to offer Guillermo the job. Mm. But the only reason why I thought that they would do that was because of the just hue and cry from the slice of the core, so to speak. I mean, so relentless. It was, you know, every time you turn around on Twitter, it's like, you know, hire GBS, give GJ the job. And to me, that was also kind of the wrong direction to go. The timing for that just didn't seem right. And so I think there was a lot of that in what the crew were trying to do, was to say, this guy's a legitimate candidate. Don't sell him short.
You know, and it's kind of like buying a house. I mean, you only have... You can't buy whatever house you want. You can only buy the houses that are for sale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, who else is available right now? We'll just have to see. It's such an unknown.
We look at this, and one of the things that I think is interesting, and actually Jim Bach is in the middle of putting it together right now. Because he's a very defensive coach, and a couple of things I want to say. He did not finish outside of the top 10. In that Swedish second league, the 2 years he was there,
mm-hmm.
right? I think it was. I want to say it was fifth and sixth. That's good enough in MLS. That is.
Well, he was fired or let go because he was. Yeah, the team got a little bit worse.
Yeah,
I don't know what position they were in, but.
Well, they obviously weren't in a promotion position, or else they would have been promoted. So, if you're looking at third versus fifth in MLS, that doesn't mean a whole lot, but. If you look at that, and then you look at, what's going on here, I don't think anybody would have complained if we would have finished fifth in the league this year. Would anybody have complained about that?
And also, I mean, obviously, and this is where we kind of run into a problem with comparing MLS to European leagues.
Yeah.
Because, okay, let's say you're managing a team in Norway.
Yeah.
You have
I'd be really sad because I was in Norway.
Norway's awesome. Yeah. Don't bust on Norway. That's my people.
We love you, Mix.
Yeah. But like, but let's say you're managing a team in Norway.
Okay.
You have an opportunity to play in the Champions League.
Yeah.
In the European Champions League. You have an opportunity there that the same thing does not equate here in MLS. Like, you say, okay, well, you finished sixth in MLS. You make the playoffs. Absolutely right. It's a different standard.
Yeah.
If let's say in Norway you have to build a team to compete for the league championship there, and you finish, I don't know, maybe they get one spot in the Champions League, and then they have to, it has to be like a qualification round that they have to play in.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a different goal. I mean, you're building a team for a different end result, and I'm sure it's the same way in Sweden. Or also, you know, compare it to the theoretical hire of Guillermo.
Yeah.
I mean, what he's trying to do in a team like Llanos is enormously different than what would happen here in Columbus.
Of course.
So everybody who was like, go hire Guillermo, he knows how to coach. Well, he knows Argentina because he grew up there. He played there for years. He was a superstar there. He is beloved in that country.
Yeah.
It's a completely different thing. And yes, when you put the ball out there in the field, soccer is soccer. You run your formations and your strategies, they equate across leagues, but the way that the leagues work are very different.
I think the evaluation is different at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you might try to put whether the players that are assembled for you were in Stockholm or Columbus, you might be doing the same types of things with them and run the team the same way.
Mm-hmm.
The end of the season, you know, a fourth or fifth place there versus a playoff spot here, you might be the same place on the table. The fans, organization, everybody sees it differently.
Yeah.
You know, it's acceptable.
That's the whole thing.
Like,
it's
playoffs
acceptable
is the bar. It's acceptable.
That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. As long as we make the playoffs.
Yeah.
As long as we make the playoffs. And in fifth place here is... You know, third place or second place in the East. It's not fifth place. And that's the difference, and that's the kind of weirdness about MLS, because it doesn't really matter when you make the playoffs if you've got the momentum. Look at Houston.
Yeah.
Look at Houston. look at the crew in 08. Look at everybody that beat the crew in 09 and 10, you know?
I think that the way that the crew needs to build itself, though, to be successful year in, year out, is a lot of the same things that they've been doing this year, especially the second half of the year, where they're featuring their homegrown talent. This is affordable talent for the crew. This is these are players that, you know, whether they're regional or at least they came through the academies, you know, they're known quantities, and they will be here, you know, year in and year out. And I don't know. I'm not sure.
It's weird. It's like when I mentioned.
Losing Bliss is losing a bit of that identity.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if that part of the equation is as important to pre-court as it was to the previous
regime.
It's like
I mentioned during the conversation with Simon.
Yeah.
I said, you know, here we've been building up towards this thing where you're building up an academy-based almost a team that's going to be the top of a developmental pyramid. And now you're bringing in a guy who really has no familiarity with that at all.
Yeah.
Not even when he was in Sweden. As far as I know, how involved was he with those? We don't know. And now he's been hired as this quote-unquote sporting director. Now I know that they're going to hire someone else to take that spot, but is he here to develop those U16, U17 kids? Is he going to have a mindset for those, or is he going to be going back saying, you know what, this is a kid, you know, like you mentioned, you know, is this a kid from another country who I've had ties with? I mean,
yeah,
it's a change.
Part of
in
a different
in approach.
Well, I one of the first things that he said is that he was going to work with is it
Andrews?
That he was going to work with him because he realizes the strength of the crew's youth program. And that's one of the things that he was checking out at Barcelona, where he was, is their academy system. His trek through Europe, he was checking out their academy systems and how it works and what the structure is, you know, how they do things. So I really do think that is going to be part of his work. Might be not his immediate work. I mean, you can't really say that Bliss had a huge hand in that. That academy system was starting to grow before Bliss got here. So, you know, if anything, it would be to the guys that are in charge of the youth program, really. But in the grand scheme of things, I mean, who knows? We're to a certain degree, I really feel that the fans still feel that they're under Hunt Sports Group.
There's a lot of that.
Yes,
yeah, there is.
And that's not really the case anymore, and I think that's what Precourt is trying to do.
But that
that identity. We're not under Hunt Sports Group anymore. We're going to do something different.
That's a really good point, though, but this youth program was built under the Hunt Sports Group people.
How many actual crew fans pay attention to the youth program outside of when somebody is brought up or they have a kid in their youth program?
Well, that's true, but what I'm saying is,
you're talking about
fan perception. I'm talking about actually building it.
Yeah,
and so I'm not arguing with you either. But what I'm saying is, like, let's say that that's the case. Let's say that there's a difference between fan perception, that decisions are being made on a business level as to who's going to coach. That fans are perceiving that to be same status quo, same old, same old.
Yeah.
Well, we know that that's not the case, but if the decision was said, you know, they're going to work with the current structure of the youth program, that youth program was built under the Hunt Sports Group. And I'm, in my personal opinion, I think there needs to be some big changes with the academy program.
Yeah.
I think the academy program has been based primarily in a way to make, to have a return on investment that is not based in production of good players. It's more based on, like, let's seize the area. And I think that is not necessarily a good thing. I think what that does is that creates almost a monopoly sort of market. And what they need to do is be able to focus on that quality of what they're turning out. And that's a real possibility under the new regime, but there's going to have to be some big changes if that's your focus.
Yes, but right now, half of your starting day roster is homegrown players.
Not necessarily. Hold on. Necessarily because they
look. They went to college.
Not necessarily because they earned those spots as good players. Because they let's be clear here. What the reason why that a lot of those guys, and I think all the best to those kids. Seriously, all the best to those kids. But my goodness, some of those players had no business being on a Major League Soccer roster.
I agree.
And they were put there because there was this push to sell what the Columbus Crew are doing on a youth academy or developmental level.
Well, they gotta sell tickets.
Yeah.
They gotta sell tickets. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big thing. But yeah. You know,
and if you know,
at some point, if you're building your soccer team to be good,
yeah,
to be competitive, then what you need to do is you need to develop those players. Like I said, quality. Not just saying, you know what, we're going to have a couple guys who are, you know, we're going to have a roster that's got like 6 out of 11 players that are from Ohio. That's a really good selling point.
Yeah.
Is it, though? I don't buy that. Players, I don't think though. That, like, because a guy went to Gahanna or to Worthington or whatever, that's going to bring people from
it totally will.
Around town on the field. I think
it totally will. No, it'll bring people from Gahanna and Worthington. It will. If you know that whoever from Gahanna is starting and you went to Gahanna or you're friends with him,
or if you're friends with him, I mean, that's going to
I go back and forth. It doesn't seem, wins don't seem to matter. Like, if you're looking at attendance, you know, what years were high and what years are low. I mean, it seems to be more of, like, what kind of player is on the team. And I will see next year if it helps. But I do think having local players this year helped attendance.
Oh, it definitely helped.
Now, whether that's a
long-term
solution.
I agree. It helped the bump.
The one thing that you say frequently, Larry, that I agree with 100%, is, like, the Crew try something out for a little while.
Yeah.
And then they throw it away.
Yeah.
Totally.
So next year we won't know because, you know, are they helping or not?
Yeah, there's no way to end up quantifying it.
Yeah.
We don't have a frame of reference. That's all I'm trying to say is that with a new coach and a new ownership and new responsibilities,
the fans
are feeling irate because they have no frame of reference.
Anxiety.
To build their
like angst upon. They're like a child who wanders into the movie halfway through.
We'll
I'm just saying.
Something to be angst about.
All right, we're going to come back in just a little bit here.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Larry, go ahead.
So the ultimate thing on figuring out if it was a decent hire or not, at least the way we feel right now, is if, you know, a playoff spot is achievable next year.
Yeah.
You know, is this the kind of hire that gets us there next year? I mean, you guys are closer to the team than 95% of the people out there.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
I mean,
I think it will. I think it will. We were in the bottom of the, not even haves, but the maybe haves. You know, you have the have-nots. Well, you have the have-nots, which are Toronto,
Chivas,
and DC, and then you have the maybe haves, and that's everybody who actually had a shot at the playoffs within the last month of the regular season.
Us, Vancouver, and San Jose.
We were in the bottom of that, right?
Yeah. So you think. You think this is the kind of hire that gets the Crew, makes them better. Not only
God, I hope
just a position or two.
No,
the
flipping hope at the end of the day.
I think it's personnel.
On the
field.
Well, yeah, it's going
to
be personnel.
What Larry wrote about on the website.
Yeah,
this team is going to possibly go through some incredible roster changes.
Yeah,
like all that stuff that we did a couple weeks ago about like who we're going to pick.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Throw that stuff out the window. I mean, Eddie Gavin's gone.
Yeah,
yep.
It's crazy.
Now what happens?
It's 30%.
All right, we're going to come back and we're going to talk playoffs here in just a second. This is the Massive Report.
Decide that the things that I tried were in my life just to get high on. when I sit alone, come get a little known, but I need more than myself this time. Step from the road to the sea to the sky, and I do believe that we rely on. When I lay it on, come get to play it on, all my life to sacrifice. Hey, yo, listen what I say.
All right, we're back. It's segment four. This is the Massive Report. It's a snow night.
Oh, that's weird.
Snow.
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 Second snow of the year, though.
Yeah.
God, it's creepy. It's so weird that it's like, I don't have any concept of time, mostly because of the head injuries I suffered as a child. Mm. So, you know, it's just weird for me. That's all I'm saying.
Well, good morning.
Thank you. So I wanted to kind of bring this up for just a second. Eddie Gavin has apparently just disappeared, and I think he's become a moisture farmer on Tatooine. Well, I think that's what he did. He went off the grid. But condo's empty for sale, and he is just gone at this point. So I want to, real quick, before we get into, we're going to talk about the playoffs. Where do you think Eddie Gavin is, and what do you think Eddie Gavin's doing? Nate, right to you.
I think he's a farmer in Guyana.
All right, Justin.
I don't know.
All right.
I just want to know why.
You want to know why?
Yeah.
You know, we were talking before.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Kind of off the microphone about, like, our thoughts about what is going on, why this happened. You know, there was a time, and I mentioned this, about 2009, I remember sitting, like, very close to the field on the east side of the field at a stadium, and there was a moment that where I remembered just how good, I realized just how good he was.
Yeah.
Like, the potential that, he came running by, and he looked to me in that instant that, it's like, this is a guy who could play for the United States men's national team.
Yeah, totally.
He should be playing for the United States men's national team.
I agree.
And why that never materialized, I think we all have theories. Yeah. But I think one of the theories is that the reason was because he was playing for our particular coaching staff and their particular team. And you
Bobby
know,
Dubs.
At some point, I think after this injury, obviously I have no idea, but I can totally see why he would say, boy, this sucks.
Yeah,
you know?
Screw it.
This is. I'm working to get back from this injury, and I'm going to play. And you know, he had so much potential, and I think he had he could have really been a star on the, or a frequent contributor to the United States men's national team.
Yeah.
And I think that, playing for the Columbus Crew, his devotion to the team, to the coach, previous coaching staff, I think hindered him.
Yeah. Well, he always,
what do you think,
Nate? He's a guy who always seemed to beat go to the beat of a different drummer. That's not the right way to say it, but
I get
that.
It.
I don't know that he had aspirations that were of being on the men's national team. I mean, I think the family life that he enjoyed here, this was perfect for him. I think he just loved it. And I think maybe he just said, you know what? I'm happy with how my career has gone. And, you know, financially, I think he was probably set to roll off into a different environment where, you know, he just wanted to do different things with his life. I don't think he was at all a typical soccer starlet.
Yeah. I think if he were in a different situation, maybe in a different city with a different ownership group and coach, you know, sort of guided him. This is how you get on the national team. Here's your mentor. Here's the person that gets you with Klinsmann. Or here's the person that gets you to play in another league, second division, Swedish league, or the English championship. And I'll never forget, you know, watching him against Stoke and, you know, a couple years ago. That's the most energetic and involved in a game I'd seen him in a couple years.
Yeah.
And I truly felt like, not that he was auditioning, but almost like that got him excited. It was something different, something outside the United States that he'd been doing since he was 16 years old. And, you know, when he got hurt, I felt like sort of what Justin was saying is that he just saw the other side.
Yeah.
There's something else, you know, and yeah. I'm going to move, become whatever he's going to become in New yeah. Jersey or wherever.
A moisture farmer on tattoo. Yeah. That's
and he did it very, very yeah. quickly, and that's the unusual thing.
Yeah. But. All right. Well, let's talk playoffs for a minute here. So then there were four. You've got Salt Lake and Portland. You've got Houston and Kansas City. Salt Lake comes back and stuns everybody against the Galaxy. I want to do just a quick roundtable on that. What do you guys think about that?
Well, I mean,
somebody, please grab it.
You know, okay, I'll tell you how I partook of those games.
Yeah.
I think they played on Thursday. I was driving in my car, and I listened to the entire match on Sirius FC, which is really good,
it's
by the way.
It's a Sirius FC, by the way.
Yeah, and they...
Sirius Business.
They had the RSL call of the game. So
yeah.
Kyle... not Kyle. Brian Dunseth and whoever his partner is, who is, you know, just your typical play-by-play guy. But it was really great to listen to them, and then I went back and I watched the game, the replay of it. LA basically gave the game away
yeah.
in that first leg. They should have won that game probably 4-0, and they didn't. They won it 1-0, and they gave RSL a lifeline.
Yeah.
And that team is... You know, I mentioned it with Simon. I really believe this. I think Kyle Beckerman is the most valuable player in this league.
Yeah.
There is no player who is so much the center of his team
yeah.
than that guy.
Yeah.
And he... That team reminds me of every team that you see that... Well, it reminds me of the 08 crew. I mean, they're strong up the middle.
Yeah.
And... And that's they bossed that game last night.
Yeah.
Totally. It's going to be interesting to see how that changes for the Portland game when they go back to Portland in 2 weeks.
I know. That's super
what the
lame.
Heck?
Super freaking lame.
Edge of your seats.
Yeah.
Stuff.
So forget
yeah.
about
yeah.
the tired legs and everything because,
yeah.
I mean, if there's tired legs, it's because they're out climbing mountains in this 2 week layover. But they that team should win this. They should win the cup.
All right.
RSL is the best team I've seen so far.
Quick hit from Nate and Larry. What do you think RSL series against LA?
I didn't catch the second match of when they beat LA 2-0. My sense was that Donovan wasn't fully fit.
Yep.
I don't know. Keane seems to be kind of Superman-ish in his age, but end of the season and a lot of games stacked in. You know, I think maybe they weren't able to play with you know, their strongest suit.
Yeah, I feel like if those two guys aren't in it,
yep,
100, you know, if they're not all the way in it, you know, the rest of the team isn't strong enough to carry them.
It seems like Janino is like lost a step or something. He isn't as productive as he once was.
All right, Portland, Seattle. I want to talk about this for a second. Holy crap. And hilarious as hell. Quick hits. We'll start with Larry. What do you think?
Seattle was exactly what they looked like the last month or so of the season.
Yeah.
They're just not you know, the cliche, a collection of good players not, you know, does not a good team make. And they're just not a good team. And whether that's, you know, coaching,
yeah,
which I think they're blaming it on coaching right now.
Yeah. Oh, they are.
They're
definitely blaming
it. It seems like they're making
coaching.
This really big production of it. And it's
oh, yeah.
kind of like, if you're getting rid of him, just get rid of him and move on. Don't
Seattle
press
fans, I tweeted this earlier this week, but Seattle fans seem like they were born on third base and thought
they
had
that
a triple.
Was excellent, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
seriously.
Excellent
it's,
way to put it. But why the production? I just don't understand. Like, the owner was out talking about it today, and he was like,
yeah.
well, we're going to talk about it with him later. It's kind of like
a joke.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Total joke.
They will never win anything if this is how he runs the team.
Yeah, no, they won't.
So,
and what coach would want to go and be a part of all that?
Mm. I, yeah.
You know.
Oh, everybody.
You don't coach.
Sir Alex Ferguson is going to come coach for you because you guys know so much about soccer. You horrible people you are.
They just
gosh.
You know, for Major League Soccer, they, you know, that team needs to do well, and they're pretty much doing everything they shouldn't do.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, dear God. Do you know they're a bus fire. Yeah. They are.
What I hope happens is they fire Siggy. He immediately the next day gets a job coaching for Vancouver.
He'll either get that or I think Hunt Sports Group will be giving him a call now.
Yeah.
Down in Dallas. Well,
he wouldn't even have to move if he goes to Vancouver.
That's true.
Yeah.
He just stays right in the city and coaches them up and just dominates the hell out of Seattle for the next 5 years.
Nate, what do you think about Seattle-Portland?
Because that's what matters in Seattle.
That game was a blast to watch.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what Larry said. And that Seattle didn't look like a team for the second pretty much half of the year. And I know I picked them to win because I just thought...
Because you're lame.
They were due.
Yeah, because you're dumb,
though.
But, you know. Wow. I mean...
I didn't say I'm dumb and I picked Seattle.
I actually was dumb. I mean, did you see my picks? Good Lord.
No,
I think I was
super dumb.
I missed 3 out of 4.
Super dumb.
I was right there with you, man.
It was really bad.
All right, so let's talk about New England, Kansas City. Real quick, Nate, we'll start with you.
I would say that was another one that I was disappointed in my picks. I thought, New England was like so lovable. They're so cute.
Yeah,
I wanted them to win. They're
kind
all
of adorable.
You know, out there, you know, 20-nothing years old and going to take down the best team. And I thought the best team in the East for the whole season. New York was, you know, obviously they won the Supporter Shield and they won the Cup or they won the league. But
yeah.
The Eastern side. I would say they just ran out of time. You know, Glass Slipper fell off and you know, KC brutalized them.
Jables.
That's a really well good way to put it. They brutalized them. I mean, Matt Reese didn't even finish that game.
Yeah.
They finished. I don't even know who they put in to play goalkeeper for them.
It was a player. It was.
I can't remember.
Their defender.
It was a fan.
Farrell.
Yeah.
it was a fan.
But, you know, Matt Reese walking off.
The 400.
5 to 7 months stadium. Out, too. He had surgery.
Is it
today,
really?
Yeah, he tore a quad, I think.
That sucks. I hope, you know, for Matt Reese's sake, I hope he's okay. Yeah. That sucks. Larry, your quick thoughts on...
The frustrating thing about Kansas City is they do a really good job finding players.
Yeah.
And Vermes drills those players and gets them all in line.
Yeah, totally.
That's what's frustrating about Kansas City, is they do those kinds of things well.
Yeah.
And the Glass Slipper did fall off New England. They're very inconsistent throughout the year. And it got to the end of the season, and it almost felt like they realized maybe they were sort of in the deep end of the pool and they shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
So
they looked down. Like, you know how in animation, you can run on air until you look down. If you look down, then you fall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They looked down.
Yeah, they felt like, wow, we made it this far and we really shouldn't have.
All right, last one in the first round, and then we'll do some quick hits on the second round because obviously that hasn't finished yet. But last one in the first round, Houston, New York. Nobody picked this on the entire staff.
Yeah.
So, Larry, I'm going to start with you. What is wrong with you?
A lot of wishful thinking. I was hoping to see, a matchup with New York and New England. It would have been a really great and fun matchup.
It would.
Justin and I were talking about fun Major League Soccer games in between. They just don't happen that often, and that would have been fun.
Oh, God, yeah.
But watching Kansas City and Houston for the third year in a row just doesn't sound fun to me. So,
I
think Kansas City should... You know, they really should put this away. They should advance.
Well, we'll talk about Kansas City and Houston as well while we're talking about Houston beating New York. Justin, your thoughts? No, that's totally fine. We gotta get some time in, time regained because Sam's gonna fall asleep.
Yeah,
Justin, what do you think?
It sucked.
Yeah, that's it.
That's all I'm gonna say.
All right, fair enough, Nate.
Yeah. Again, that was the team I had going the whole way, and they just didn't even show.
Yeah, they didn't.
I was disappointed. They had some chances, I guess. To be fair, like they're right there. They just lack of focus. I don't know what you call it. I mean, maybe it just wasn't their night.
The designated player just falling through.
Yeah. Yeah,
we mentioned with Simon earlier. They just, where are you?
Yeah. Well, I agree. All right, last thing we're going to talk about real quick, and then we'll wrap the show up here. Portland and Salt Lake. Holy crap.
Salt Lake came out and dominated the crap out of Portland. What do you think, Nate? What's going to happen on the return leg in the Rose 7 years? Yeah.
Oh, my God. I think the most important goal of that match was the one in the 90th minute or whatever when Portland did score that I think was a header maybe. It's the only thing that would have kept this a realistic series. Because I don't think, Salt Lake's given up three in Portland.
No,
but
not in Portland,
but
no.
Two and then overtime, it's in play. So if I was a Salt Lake fan, I'd be happy, but I would actually be still pretty disappointed in that giving up that last goal.
Justin.
I agree with everything that Matt or that Nate just said.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Larry.
Yeah. I think that Portland can make up the two-goal difference. I think it's going to extra time penalties.
You really?
Did? Yeah.
Because if we go back to the predictor, I thought it was going to be plus three Salt Lake. And then
Ryan, why
plus,
do you
plus
do
three?
Stop it.
Plus three Portland and Portland. I thought it was going to be, unbalanced like that, like it sort of played out.
Well, the last time that they played in Portland, it was a 3-3 draw.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. If they can stop them, prevent them from.
Yeah, 3-3 draw helps Salt Lake. So
here's my question: who would you rather have as your keeper, Donovan Ricketts or
Nickramundo?
Nickramundo, right?
Yeah.
Nickramundo.
I would.
But
I don't like
Ricketts,
but yeah,
in Portland.
Ricketts in Portland is
dealing with turf. Does crazy turf? Does plastic matter with PKs? You would think it has. It changes the footing.
I think so.
If you rip it off the ground, it's going to skip a little differently than if you rip it off grass,
I
guess.
The thing that we kept hearing last night, if you're watching the game, the commentary during the game, Taylor Twellman, and then all the Twitter conversation was speed kills.
Yeah.
I mean, that's stuck out to me. Like, everyone says speed kills.
Meaning?
It's true. It's
the ball goes right out of bounds because you're on plastic? Is that what you're talking about?
I think that speed equation alters when you go back to the plastic turf.
Yeah.
RSL had a big speed advantage in terms of Robbie Finley basically attacking footy. Then, mm-hmm. So, I mean, that was where it was most telling. I think it's going to be nullified in that on that turf. And so the thing that also, you use to attack speed is size. And so if it gets to PKs, Donovan Ricketts is a big dude.
Yeah. And he is.
And he's also quick.
He's extremely athletic.
So, I'm not going to necessarily eliminate him just because of his size.
And that's a narrow field, too. I think that's another thing
super
that's
narrow,
an equalizer as far as speed goes. I think that means the speed won't matter as much.
All right, well, that's, that music means the show's over. So,
is that what that means?
It does.
Oh, I
dear God.
I've been wondering all year.
That's what happens. Lot of things going on. Playoffs, obviously, still. We'll keep you up to date on that. Thanks again to Simon Borg for showing up and doing it. Thanks to Sam for turning the gears for us. Nate, Justin, Larry, everybody here at the Massive Report. My name is Matt Goschert. I want to stand as close to the edge as I can without going over. On the edge, you see all the kind of things you can't see from the center.